Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast. I've got the cold that is going round at the moment, so you have to forgive me for sounding extremely bunged up. How are you? I hope you're good. This week's episode is brought to you, as always, by the lovely Golding Accountancy. WeAreGolding.com for all your accountancy needs. Hi. As I'm recording this, the sun is shining outside and it's a really beautiful day and it's making me feel very happy. I was joined this week by the amazing Rebecca Marsh, aka Tiny Miss Becca and Essex Girl, which I only recently discovered because on Instagram she's the letter S number 6 girl. And I was like, Essex Girl? I just never got it. And then it wasn't until quite recently that I was like, Essex Girl. And I'm from Essex. I'm an Essex girl. Anyway, whatever. So she came on to talk to me all about being a female tattooist and how she got to doing the amazing pieces that she does now. She tattoos me. That's how I know her. But the tattoos that she's given me have changed the way I feel about my body, which is quite amazing because I wasn't expecting them to. But she has that with a lot of her clients, so I wanted to get her on so we could talk all about that. And also she's written a book, drew a book. She's got a tattoo book full of some amazing illustrations, so I want to promote that as well because it's beautiful. But if this is your first time listening to my podcast because you've been brought here by the lovely Becca, then I've had loads of amazing guests on. You might be aware of Nina Kate, who's a very tattooed model who's beautiful. She came on to talk about all her life and the wonderful latex clothes that she makes with Jane Doe Latex, funnily, because that's what Becca had Jane Doe, a tattoo shop called Jane Doe. So I don't know if they know each other. I think I've asked them both. I think they've met once. Anyway, that's not very interesting, is it? But yeah, I've had amazing guests on. My best friend Nicole did a couple of podcasts with me about her overcoming her cocaine addiction that she suffered with for 10 years. I've had my mate talking about dating disasters. I've had the amazing Ruth Talbot on, who campaigns for single parents' rights. I've had Marcus Bronzy and Funk Butcher on talking about their award-winning podcast episode on Black Lives Matters. I've had loads of different kinds of people on. It's not just a parenting podcast, but I am a single parent and that's why I started it. Also this week, I do a YouTube series called The Epic Mum Chat with a life coach called Nikki Rettigan, who's amazing, the Epic Life Coach. And we chat about dealing with being a single parent and having to navigate your relationship with your ex-partner. And this week's episode is how you kind of deal with the guilt of not being in the family situation that you thought you'd be in anymore and how you kind of get over that, which is good. It's funny. We do have a laugh. Even though we talk about serious things, we do have a laugh. But yeah, so that's really good. So if you just type Epic Mum Chat into YouTube, then hopefully we'll come up. If not, we're on Instagram, the Epic Mum Chat, and there's a link to our page in there. Anyway, I will let you listen to Becca. I'm really not well. And I'll see you in a bit.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Work. So how will people know it's you?
Because I see it on my Instagram. I'm probably well confused. Essex girl, Tiny Miss Becca, Becca Marsh.
Who are you?
Huh? Maybe it's because I wanted to be more grown up, finally. Mm-hmm. Maybe, the little names like Tiny Miss, I guess it's never, because I never really took anything too seriously, or thought, I don't know, is that serious? I don't know.
But is that because you didn't feel like you wanted to be taken seriously? Was it like a defence thing?
It was hard to be taken seriously back then. And I did have a lot of, when I first started, not that it really affects me, so I don't talk about it, because I hate when you bring stuff up because people think, no, that's what. But I did have a lot of people tell me to quit.
Seriously?
Male terrors.
Seriously? Mm-hmm. Why?
I definitely was doing probably work that was beyond my capabilities.
In what sense?
Doing necks, doing hands, doing big pieces. And I don't know if I was technically capable of that yet. But I got told that, I think the problem, being female and being approachable, I was always busy. And I was doing big custom work from quite an early on in my career. I don't think a lot of male tattooers liked it.
Really?
Yeah.
Were there any women working? Were you always the only woman in whatever shop you were in, or were there any other women?
I did my apprenticeship, I was the only female. Then I went to work for some Hells Angels. I was the only female. But then I went specifically to a shop in Birmingham that was owned by a really successful, probably one of the, at the time, best known females in England.
Okay.
And there was me, Joe and Dawn. So there were three girls tattooing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sorry, I'm just checking that's recording, but it is recording. So today.
Yes. I've just seen you poking out your trousers.
Oh yeah, I'll show you.
I've seen it.
My healed tattoo on my stomach.
How good is that? I know it's got this little tattoo.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
I'm just dreading you colouring in the bit of linen.
I ordered some Amatop today, so I couldn't put it in the fridge.
That's
the numbing cream, but I only use it on some people where I know it's going to suck for a bit, so I just put it on. But that's really bright.
It's absolutely beautiful. I love it. So today I'm joined by the lovely Becca.
Yep.
A.K.A. Tiny Miss Becca, A.K.A. Essex Girl. I do have a confession to make. When I found you on Instagram, obviously I followed you on Instagram, it took a very long time for me to realise that S6 Girl was Essex Girl.
No one gets it until they say it out loud.
Yeah.
The amount of times I'm at a convention and someone's like, S6,
Yeah.
Essex, even friends in Canada, it took, I reckon, 2 years before she sent me a text one day to be like, oh, you must think I'm stupid.
I just never, it just never dawned on me. I'm like, how the fuck did it never dawn on me?
It's an S and a 6. You don't, until you say it out loud.
Yeah.
But that's a minute. Instagram wasn't a thing, was it? It was just a...
Yeah, I suppose.
Like, if we look back all to, like, MySpace days, no one used proper names. It was all, like...
What were you on MySpace?
No. No way.
What did you put on MySpace? Tattooing, or...
That's how I got a lot of clients, but I didn't... originally, no. It was just, like, obviously, like, everyone else, music and pictures of yourself, some weird emo kid. But I'm not going to say what it was, but it was... my name was a line from a Sylvia Plath poem. Yep.
Oh yes. Yeah. So let's go right back then. So you were started. You were an art student, weren't you? Was it sculpture?
Yeah, I was at Chelsea doing sculpture.
So did you always? When did you start with sculpture? Because that's quite a
A level. I did do a lot of mixed media, and looking back, a lot was kind of sculptural based.
Okay.
It was never. I've never done traditional casting. Actually, never done anything like that. Like, I guess I didn't know the techniques, and it seemed quite labour intensive and laborious to even get like casting right. So I didn't. It was just big installations.
What like?
I would say the easiest way to describe it were 3D landscapes.
Okay.
So my. Now I'm older, I can actually articulate what I used to do, but back in the day, I was so shy, I was like, I don't know. But it'd be a lot of building. It'd be basically kind of an anti-art way in which most people go to a gallery and just stand still and look at something. So I would have a space and I'd build something so you navigated your way around a space.
Okay.
So let's just say there was a bunch of building materials and you've got MDF and you've got chipboard. Then I would use like an extension lead, but an orange one, and that would trail through a space. So your eye would be caught by the orange, and you would walk in and around, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or like I'd use pink plasterboard a lot, sandwiched between boring material, like your standard building material.
Yeah.
So you'd just have a little bit of flash of colour, and you would walk around. I used to do a lot of like assemblage stuff, so you'd have, I don't know, like a glue gun and then, like, there'd be a shoe, and then there'd be some wood. But if you put things like shoes or everyday objects, then people want to put a narrative of, like, where did that shoe, who did it belong to?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was a bit like, it's got nothing to do with the shoe.
Yeah.
Or the person that wore it. I just want you to, like, be intrigued by a space.
Yeah.
But...
So how did you, were you always creative?
I think I was always artistic, but I was also really quite good at school in general.
Yeah.
I was the sporty, arty, clever kid, so they didn't really know. I guess I didn't get bullied or anything like that. I did it when we were younger, but like at school, I just got on with everyone.
Where did you go to school?
Chafford in Raynham, Essex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they used to hire implants for parents' day and then send them out so the school looked good. Odd.
You what?
Yeah, the headmistress was awful, but she'd every like parents' day she'd hire in all these plants so the school looked great and then they'd go again the next day.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's such a weird thing. Why don't you just have plants aren't expensive?
I don't know. I remember it was like all for show and it wasn't really under the surface. It was like not an awful school, really.
Huh.
But
so you did art, so the Chelsea College of what was it, art and fashion?
It was Chelsea College of Art. It was part of the London Institute. So you had St Martin's, London College of Fashion, the printmaking one, and Chelsea.
That's pretty fancy pants, isn't it?
Yeah, it was 28 people that got on that course a year. And then
What, in the whole country?
Well, it's including the world. So it was 20, and it had, sculpture took on 28, and I think about 12 were foreign applications, which then I found out when I sat in on interviews in my final year that all the foreign students, they didn't even send a portfolio. They basically just got in because of the amount of money they paid.
Seriously?
Well, some were, like, obviously, some were great. And actually, most of them were great. But I was like, what? Like, so they're just going to give you, back then it was obviously, I guess, cheap looking at what universities cost now.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're going to give you 10 grand a term and they might not be able to do anything. Yeah, it was.
But then I suppose they must have to want to do that and want to spend the money on it. They must have some kind of.
Yeah, but some. I think not anything. Some people want to do a degree that they just think will be fun, and they want to be in London.
Yeah, yeah.
And hang out in London.
So what, did you commute or did you live there?
I commuted. I couldn't afford it. It was.
Did they not have subsidised student accommodation in Chelsea?
I don't think so. I never fitted in anyway. I think there was two of us that weren't privately educated.
I was going to say, did you, were all of your peers?
I remember to do a foundation year to even get into Chelsea, which I did at Camberwell, I had to ask my council to pay for my travel because it was a foundation. There's no money. So I was like, well, I've got onto this course, but unless you give me £1,400 of travel, I can't go. Yeah.
It cost travel into, because I lived in Basildon, and I think it worked out, it cost me £15 a week more to rent a place in East London than it did to get the train. Because it was so, train travel is so expensive, isn't it?
Yep.
And I suppose art is one of those subjects, as all creative subjects are, it's like internships and education. Yeah. If you need parents that can support you and basically pay you because they don't pay.
Yeah, there's
nothing. So it's quite, but that's good that they did pay.
Yeah, they paid that. And then I just did part-time jobs while I was doing my degree all the time.
So how was the degree?
I did enjoy it, but I think because I commuted every day.
That must have taken a couple of hours, must
it? Yeah, like it could take 2 hours each way. And I didn't have the full unit. Like if were people going out drinking or for food, I'd always be really aware that I need to get home.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really join in, and I was really shy. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And but at the end, I just thought, God, what a waste. Is this a waste of time? It's so subjective. And then someone who's never met you judges your work. It was odd. It did leave a really bad taste in my mouth. And I remember sculpture originally got too many firsts compared to, obviously, painting. So they took away marks off of sculpture because we were too strong, the department, to even it out in the unit. And that's when I'm like, pardon, what?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, they just take away marks.
Okay. So when did the tattooing start?
Second or first year of my degree, I think I did have a bit of a realisation that I am not middle class enough to make, being realistic, I do installations. How's that a thing? Like, you can't go in, I'm not going to make money from that. And then my sister
What do you do with that?
I don't know. I don't know if you'd go into, I don't know, window display or, I don't, or you'd go and do a master's and then you'd go do, like, you can't. But it's not like a painting where you can sell it and you can hang it on someone's wall. It was all site-specific.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even a sculpture you could have. Something. It was all like, a lot of it was just propped up like it was really just assemblage. It was standing up by the skin of its teeth. So you couldn't move that anywhere else. So my sister, I was very aware that this wasn't going to make me money. Even though, obviously, I wanted to be creative. And I didn't really know what to do. My sister had got really shit tattoo when she'd been in university in Leicester and had it fixed down the road at Gants Hill.
Yeah.
And then I just was a bit naive and was like, oh, I could probably do that. And I went and asked
her. So did you have any tattoos yourself? No.
I didn't have any for the first 2.5 years.
Really?
I think I was tattooing people with no tattoos.
Wow.
I didn't want any. They were, because you'd look on the wall and you'd have to pick, and I was like, I don't want any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Or like my twin had had this awful tribal sun or like some stars, and I was like, no.
Yeah.
So, but to me it was like, oh, it's a creative job where you can make some money. Not like loads of money, but why not? So I just did an apprenticeship.
So didn't you practice on yourself? Because isn't that...
My boss wouldn't let me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I'm really glad about. I must admit, I did once when he was away, put a stencil on and tattooed myself with water. But because I was concentrating so much, I must have gone in quite deep. So for about the next 6 months, every time I had a bath or a shower, there'd just be this red outline snore on my leg. But it wouldn't let me. I practiced on pigskin and then literally people.
Wow. But so your sister had got a tattoo fixed in that shop.
She'd gone to Gants Hill and got that fixed. And I think a couple of other people I knew were getting tattooed there, and they must have dropped my name because I was doing art and I looked a bit weird. And they had messaged me, said, oh, we don't have any positions. And then about 6 weeks later, they said, oh, we do.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm at uni and I've got a part-time job, so can I do 2 days a week? And they were like, okay, that's it.
So what was that, apprentice?
Yeah.
So what did you have to do?
Everything I was told. Like, there was no picking and choosing. It was like, that's booked in for you, you're doing it.
Yeah.
And luckily I was naive.
Oh, what, tattooing,
I did pigskin really quickly.
Oh, really?
And then also was like a receptionist.
Yeah.
And helping, doing some drawing. But to be honest, I was thrown in way too early.
So what was the first thing you tattooed on someone?
I can't really remember. But I tattooed a couple of his clients. I remember this guy called Paul. He was heavily tattooed, worked on the railways. And I remember doing like a little tiny skull with like an eyeball in it. And I tattooed some weird, what looked like toilet signs on my sister's ankles. But I didn't even watch me once.
Really?
No. Just basic. I know I did like mum in script on someone and it just looked like, and he fixed it. But, I mean, just let me carry on.
Wow.
But back then, at least, you picked something, someone picked something off a wall.
Yeah.
And you just copied it. It wasn't like you have to go home and draw it and spend hours. Yeah. And it was all quite... Tattooing was, like, small, wasn't it? It wasn't...
Yeah.
It's very rare someone would be like, I want a back piece or a sleeve.
Yeah.
So, thank God.
So, did you stencil off the... Because, obviously, you picked the design. Were there stencils off?
Yeah, the flash would always be... Well, I thought it was always just, like, the full colour image. And sometimes they would provide the line work... behind, like, you'd have the sheets in the back of the line work with the flash, because obviously that's what shops would spend loads of money on, was buying in the flash.
Yeah.
But sometimes it would just, I'd just take it out and just hand draw over the top.
Yeah. So when did tattoo shops start getting artists in that would draw? Because that was how it was back in the day, wasn't it? It was just standard.
There were a couple of shops like Into You in Farringdon. Alex had definitely travelled the world. And I think it's seen that there were possibilities to make large, the tattooing could change.
Yeah.
And think a lot more about composition. That's the thing, because it's hard, because a lot, tattooing, even way before, like back, you weren't, didn't have to be artistic. It was just marking someone.
Yeah.
So why would anyone, and they were like stickers. It's weird, the transition now where you're like, oh my God, you actually can work out how the body works with an image and it moves with it.
Yeah.
That wasn't what tattooing was.
Yeah.
And it was like something like people would get a date or a name because it meant a lot to them. The thought of, I want a bird on me or a flower just because I like the way it looks, that wasn't really tattooing, was it? Because people still were like, what does it mean? And you're like, it doesn't have a meaning.
Nothing.
That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know really when it changed. Like, it's even hard for me to think.
Yeah.
People just would be like, oh, can you... I guess because, like, new schools started to come in, so things would be a little bit more dynamic with the colours, and you get, like, lanterns, and then there were phases of, like, rockabilly-style tattoos and sugar skulls, and then...
Yeah.
You just... I guess it started with, like, I like that bit from that one and that bit from that one, and you just draw it together.
Yeah.
I mean, even down to tribal, I did so much tribal.
Yeah.
But I I couldn't do solid black. I really struggled.
Oh, really?
So for a lot of girls, I would be like, go home, copy it, but do it dot work in like black to pink or black to red or something or blue, because I could do that.
Yeah.
Technically, I could, when solid black, I'd be like, well, I can't do it.
Why?
Because really technically difficult to make it. People think it's easy. A seamless solid black is really difficult.
Why?
Because your skin changes, it's just really hard to keep it consistent.
Yeah, what, just like a line?
If you've got a whole arm of black tribal, the arm's texture and everything changes.
Yeah.
You bleed more in certain places. I guess you have, the application has to be spot on. Back then, I didn't really know what I was doing. But if I was dotting something in,
yeah,
easy.
Yeah.
So I got away with a lot of things. If I couldn't, it, I think that's the problem. If I knew I couldn't do something, I had a way of talking someone into something else that I knew I could do. And that's probably when I stopped being so shy.
Yeah.
Because I had to.
Oh, yeah, because how the hell did you tattoo people if you were shy?
I think I used to just put on a bit of a different person.
Yeah.
Because you want someone, I've always wanted someone to be comfortable in my company, especially when I didn't have any tattoos, because they would often sit down and be like, you're doing it. And I'd be like, yeah, it's me, sorry. And I don't know. And then I guess travelling every day into London, going to Chelsea. My first boyfriend was really good at like pushing me to be a bit more outgoing.
So you didn't. So when did you get your first tattoo then?
Which is my, the first proper boyfriend tattooed my. No, he didn't. My real proper first proper boyfriend was a guy called Wes, and he'd moved from Grimsby to London. And back then, because he was in a thrash metal band, all of us used to go to these club nights in London. There was one at the Wag on a Wednesday night. And one at the Borderline on a God, my mum just used to let me go to everything on a Thursday night. But there was a girl called Zoe that he'd made really good friends with, who was a barmaid at one of the clubs. But she was doing an apprenticeship in Farringdon at Interu. And because it was his best mate, he just ended up booking me in with her.
Yeah.
But she didn't have any idea that it was my first tattoo. And because I was tattooing, I didn't want to be like, your first one.
So what did you have?
Skull flower on my foot.
Oh, my first tattoo was on my foot. Yeah. Is that the worst place?
I had nothing to compare it to, so I think I thought it was all right. Like, oh, really? I remember it being hot, but...
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that was it. Started from the feet up.
And how long did it take until you were completely covered?
Well, I was 19 years.
19? Oh, okay.
But it's not that big. I used to do it in big chunks, like...
Yeah.
Full sleeve. And then wait a little while, do the other sleeve. And,
yeah.
And then more recently laser, so I can get other things done. But 20 years.
Oh, that's nearly. Right.
Yeah.
So how long were you in Gants Hill for?
I think over a year, year and a half, 2 years. And he always did have a problem with people leaving, but he did treat you like absolute shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I didn't have a very good time, but I don't like upsetting people, so I think it took me a while to leave.
Yeah.
And then there's a few personal things and some definitely non-PC behaviour.
Yeah.
Slight edges of racism and stuff like that, which I was just like, I can't be here.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, but you were the only girl there.
Yeah.
And then where did you go to from there?
From there I went, because I finished my degree. Basically, I think I finished there when I finished my degree. And then the boyfriend at the time, we were in the same position. Like, he was doing a normal courier job, but tattooing weekends and things like that in London. Yeah. We decided, we both got jobs in Kent, so we moved to Rochester. He worked for one Hells Angel, and I worked for another Hells Angel down the road. And that was it, really. And that's where... I got thrown in at the deep end and pretended like I knew what I was doing, and I had no idea.
Really? Mm. So what?
No idea.
Was it still the same setup there where it was just off the...
Yeah, but it was... I was in a little shop in Gravesend where I'd have to be there 10 till 8 at night regardless of when anyone came in. So a lot of... Because it was this dead shop.
Yeah.
Just sit there all day. All day.
Oh.
And I made friends with some locals who I ended up tattooing a lot. One of them is actually still my best friend.
Yeah.
But... Just doing little walk-ins or...
Yeah.
Doing what I was told again.
But were people just picking off the cards rather than saying...
Yeah, I think... I definitely know MySpace had started to happen, and I did start getting my first custom work through that.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't MySpace. It was a website called BME, Body Modification E-Zine.
Right.
And that was where, long story short, you were... visual overload of the most extreme stuff you can do to yourself modification wise, and we all had little profiles on that, so you'd share like pictures of drawings or some of the first tattoos I did, and it was a real good community in this country.
Yeah.
And just because I was on there, people would come and get tattoos. So I did a lot of toe tattoos, I remember.
Oh, really? Really?
Lots of toes, lots of little weird skulls.
So what was your style then when you started?
Just really naive. Because I didn't really have a draw. I was like creative, but I didn't have a drawing background.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cartoony, but not.
Yeah, I suppose. So could...
I could never really draw.
You've never really drawn?
No.
But that's... But you're amazing.
Yeah, but it takes hours. It took hours and hours and many sleepless nights to...
Wow. But all those... I mean, in your studio, you've got all your drawings.
Yeah.
And they're amazing.
Yeah, but it's just hours.
Wow.
Mm. It was really naive. But I think the only good thing of not being... Say if I'd been really good at drawing, if I hadn't been able to tattoo it, or you wouldn't have been successful with the application, I'd have been even more pissed off.
So
this way, it was like, as I got technically better at tattooing, my drawing also improved.
Yeah.
So it was...
Yeah, I suppose, because it's not... I mean, it's not... You can't get an exact replica of an artwork on you, can you? No. Like, it's not... That's not possible because skin's different to paper, but...
Yeah.
So I suppose that would be really frustrating if you did have...
A lot of kids that were painters that got into tattooing were just upset all the time because they couldn't do it on skin.
Yeah.
And no one had really told them skin's different anyway, either. Like, you can't do... I don't know.
How do you get your head around the different types of skin? Because my friend, who is an artist, he did these paintings that... These ones here and that one. Which is annoying because obviously you can't see what I'm pointing at, but I'll post pictures to him. He's covered in tattoos and he wanted to start, but he was explaining to me how it's skin is so different. Like, everyone's skin can be so different and it's really hard to try and gauge. And I was like, oh my God, I've never thought about that before. Like, it must be really hard.
It's odd. Now, I don't think twice about it anymore. I can't. I also can't think about what, like, the actual application of you are depositing this pigment into this layer of skin, because it would make you go crazy, because it shouldn't work.
Yeah.
It shouldn't work.
How does it work? Yeah, how does it work?
You basically have the different layers of epidermis and it has to sit in the right layer for it to stay.
But how do you know what that is? Just by feeling? It just is doing it much.
Obviously you don't want to go too deep because obviously you get, that's when you get blowouts and the shadowing.
Yeah.
But also, because I try not to think about it too much.
Yeah.
There's no way really you can go deep because the skin has a resistance anyway.
Right.
You can obviously choose when you set a machine up the depth of the needle. So you wouldn't want it to go in a centimetre into the skin. But realistically, if it was trying to go in, you'd get so much pushback off the skin. You're not going to be able to do a nice lot. You wouldn't be able to do anything nice.
Yeah.
But I don't really think about it.
But how long did it take you to learn how to do that?
You're always learning.
You're always... Really?
There's still some days where you just think, why didn't that work like it did yesterday? Or there's some days you struggle. Like, because... Also, skin... Like, different people hold on to different amounts of water in their body. Some people will bleed more, which means they dilute the ink more. Yeah. Some people's skin is quite grainy, and you can see a tattoo 6 months down the line, and it looks 10 years old, because the way the skin just changes it.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Because there's so much people don't appreciate, actually, how difficult...
And people have reactions, like, not having a lot. Like, we can all scab up, we can all get our clothes on it, and it just, like, you know, you can lose a bit of colour here and there. Like, a lot of the inner arm skin's different, so you will get the lines spread more, especially there, especially armpits a lot at the moment, they spread a bit more.
Yeah.
But then trying to explain it to clients as well, who think that skin's like paper, and you're like, no. So say I'm tattooing someone, and they're on their phone or they talk to me, they generally are moving their body.
Yeah.
And they move the rest of their body. So you just don't think about it. Yeah. And you have to realise they'll never be perfect.
Yes, yeah.
It's skin.
Yeah. Well, it couldn't be. It would look weird if it was perfect anyway, wouldn't it? Because it's not.
You can't.
Yeah.
I have to really try not to think about it too much.
Don't think back. So how long were you in Hell's Angels shop for?
How long were we there? Must have been a couple of years.
And again, you were the only girl?
In that shop, yeah. There, I think... I'm trying to think if there were other girl tattoos. Because my boss owned 3 shops. And his friend that my boyfriend went for owned 4 shops. They had like... Hell's Angels used to like monopolise
cities.
I don't think, was there any other girls tattooing? It's weird because I never thought about being a female in it back then, yeah. Really. It was just...
Yeah.
I know there were female receptionists, but I can't remember any other girls.
So where did you go from there? Is that when you went up to Birmingham?
Yeah, well, I went to open a shop with someone, and he ended up being a bit mental. And then I saw this job advertised in Birmingham for a really well-known shop called Modern Body Art, and back then, Joe Harrison was, like, the female in England. Yeah. So I just went for it, and I got it, and I was like, shit, I'm moving to Birmingham. And I moved to Birmingham.
And how was that?
Awful. Worst year of my life.
Oh, no, really? Why?
It's the worst year of my life.
Oh, why?
Tattoo factory.
Like, oh, really?
You... Obviously, my skill set... Well, they saw a portfolio of mine.
Yeah.
But when you're there, the reality is you have 7, 8 tattoos, 6, 5, 4, whatever, a day. You have no real control over what you're doing. You have... Back then, I remember the receptionist decided how long it would take you.
What?
So you'd have, say, nautical stars on an elbow, and then afterwards you'd have some tribal, and after that you'd have some Celtic, and it was the hardest year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was really difficult. Like,
yeah.
I get that back in the day everyone was an all-rounder, but you want to do... When you're aware that you want to do a good job... Knowing you've got to do a Celtic armband, and you also know nothing about the origins of actual Celtic artwork.
Yeah.
And so you're also making mistakes on that because you don't. It's like Japanese.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We're not Japanese. We don't know the ins and outs. How can you know all of that? And then you've got to do this koi fish with, and it turns out you might do it with the wrong flowers because that's not seasonal for that. And you're like,
yeah.
You're doing it.
Yeah.
So it's hard, really hard. But luckily, I was getting tattooed in Germany and Copenhagen by some really good tattooers, and I think that showed me a way out, or at least I was like not bogged down by the fact that it was just a horrible tattoo experience, like,
yeah,
just too much. I mean, it's too much for everyone that worked there, but no one would talk up.
Well, I suppose if that's, it's really hard, isn't it, when an environment is a certain way, you just kind of accept what's going on, and it does take someone to be like, no, this isn't all right.
You're also really aware of like who you're working for, you've looked up to.
Yes, yeah.
And you don't want to be like, guys, are you sure this is the right way?
Yeah.
It was sad to be honest. I feel like they had a lot of people that were quite creative that ended up being quite downtrodden.
Yeah.
I don't think they really cared about us individually either. I think we were definitely like money makers.
But it's such a, because getting a tattoo is a massive thing. Like, yeah, it's something that's going to be on you, well, forever, really, unless you get it removed. You want the person to be doing that, to be happy and have enough time and, you know, have enough energy. Like, the thought of going to see someone who, when you're the fourth tattoo of that day, that's completely different to the other, like, I wouldn't want to be tattooed by that person. That's, it's like, it's not good for anyone apart from the person that's making the money.
Yeah. It is a really... I think it taught me a lot of how I would never want a shop to be.
Yeah.
And there were things like they didn't have a stencil machine. So you know how I run a design through the machine.
Yeah.
Well, there everything was done by hand. So you'd draw onto a... You'd have your design, you'd draw physically onto the carbon paper and make the carbon copy and you'd stick that on. But if someone changed their mind on the direction, like, or they want it mirrored, you'd have to start from the beginning. So your day's running... Even something simple, or changing the size, you're like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure when I started there as well, like, even if, say, a bit of script, we didn't print it off a computer. It was all hand. You'd trace, they'd pick the font they wanted from the book, you'd hand trace it, and then you might change the size. I remember it being the most, I think it's a photocopy, but nothing on the computer, so it was the most backwards way ever.
That just took ages.
Yeah, everything took ages.
Oh, God. So you left there, thankfully.
Left there. Luckily, the first boyfriend that really made me who I am, like, stick with tattooing, he was still in London, and he and his friends owned a shop on Holloway Road. So I used to come, when I come back and see my mum and stuff in Essex, and because of this original BME thing, I had a lot of clients. So I would come back once a month, once every 2 months from Birmingham, just to do a little guest spot.
Yeah.
So luckily, obviously, I've got on really well with everyone there. So it was a no-brainer. Like,
yeah,
I used the, not an excuse, my nan died while I was in Birmingham, and that's when I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
So I knew I had somewhere to come back to. So then I just worked on Holloway Road for about 3 or 4 years. And it was brilliant. It was so good.
And is that where you kind of got your...
Got really... Yeah, we were kind of a new shop. And we were kind of misfits, all of us, in a weird way. And we were... like there was a lot of famous London shops, but we ended up getting a bit of a reputation. Doing nice... They all did kind of new school work, but...
Yeah.
We kind of got known. And then I just... I think I was doing custom work nearly every day.
Wow.
Yeah. I think, again, like, if you... Even though I didn't originally know what I was doing technically or would struggle,
yeah,
because I was nice to clients,
yeah,
they always came back. There's people who I used to tattoo out my bedroom that still get tattooed by me.
Yeah.
And it's not because those tattoos were great, they were awful. But they had a nice time.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt so much.
It's your magic. So when did you start, because your style now... For people that don't know you, you do very large...
illustrative, like animals,
yeah.
Kind of, bit of like arts and craft movement, bit of yeah. Like kind of architectural, ornate work in there as well.
So when did you start on that?
Probably, it's definitely progressed, but when I was getting tattooed by Lars in Berlin...
Yeah.
Subconsciously, he definitely taught me about composition, and that's when I realised tattoos could fit your body. It wouldn't just be a sticker. And
yeah.
I think it must have been through him and some little hints where... It's like when you first start, like anything, you start tattooing, you look at other tattoos on people and the flash, but he was the first person that said, if you're going to draw a bird, why don't you, like, say a swallow.
Yeah.
Don't look at a tattooed swallow. Go and actually look at what a swallow looks like. It sounds so basic now.
Yeah.
Go and look at swallow, Becca.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? If you're going to draw a lady face, why are you looking at these traditional ladies where the hair is like thick balls of wool? I remember him saying that. Why wouldn't you just look at, like, even in a hair magazine, go and look at a nice posed face and reduce that down to the line work?
Yeah.
And it seems so clear looking back. It wasn't. It like blew my mind.
So, what did you start drawing from then?
I started. That's when I started. I was already drawing, but that's when I started referencing. Right.
Yeah.
Well, not referencing realistic things, and then the way your hand moves means you will make it look like your own. So it doesn't matter if we both trace the same face. I might thicken up an eyebrow as I'm doing it, and you might not. I might put on a bit of eyeliner. You might curve the mouth a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just through repetition and actually looking at the anatomy of what you are actually intending, looking at the anatomy of your subject matter, even like a pocket watch. Look at an actual pocket watch. Does it open? Does it close? Are the shadows right?
Yeah.
Can you get different types of chain? Like, there's so many things you can look at.
Yeah.
Rather than looking at someone else's tattoo of a pocket watch.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that it just makes complete sense.
But then again, if you go back to the beginning of what tattoos were, which was you pick that off the wall and you trace it.
Yeah.
You pick something that exists and you copy it. So everything got diluted that way because you'd start. Whereas this, it was like you're trying to re-inject details into things, I think.
Yeah.
And personality. It's a tough one.
So when did you open the shop?
It would have been 2 years I haven't had it, and I had it for 10 years, so...
Wow!
12 years ago.
Because did it get to the point where you had so much of your own work, you were like, I want to start my own?
I had, even though I love Blood Brothers, because of the personal relationship and history that me and my ex had there, it kind of meant I couldn't stay there.
Yeah.
Which was really sad. And then I'd had a trip to Australia planned, just like a trip. I didn't really know what I was going to do. I'd guested a lot in England, so Sheffield was an option, Manchester was an option. Could I go on the road for a bit? But then just before I'd left to go to Australia, I honestly had dinner at ZZ's opposite what was then Jane Doe. And now I was like, if that shop is available when I get back, fuck it. Because Hornchurch, I knew, it was on the underground.
Yeah.
Had good parking.
Yeah.
Good transport links. I'd lived in Raynham. I'd lived in Romford. I was like, why wouldn't it work?
Yeah.
And my clients travelled anyway.
Yeah.
So I got back, it was empty, and contacted the landlord, and that was it. I think I would have been 27. 27?
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, 27.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah.
27.
Wow. So did you have people that you knew that you'd want to put in there with you, or was you just thinking you'd do it on your own for a
bit? I had met a boyfriend just before I'd gone to Australia who was a tattooer, and he did actually, me and him started in it.
Yeah.
And then because of him, there was a guy called Simon who messaged me very early on, and it was the three of us for a long time.
Yeah.
And it just grew and grew. And
how have you got your work?
Internet.
Internet.
And
word of mouth, I suppose.
Word of mouth, and clients just come back consistently. Yeah.
And I suppose if you're doing, like, now, you do big pieces, don't you? So it's always going to be kind of like...
There's not many women that do big pieces. I think I've just got known.
Oh, really?
I think it is...
Oh, yeah.
I guess you get known for doing a certain... Because a lot of people go, you don't do small toes. I'm like, well, I do. I don't get asked for them. But I think once I did a couple of backs, I got lucky. And, like, people just wanted huge work. So
and it takes all... You can only do one a day, can't you, when you're doing big work?
Yeah.
And then they're going to come back.
6 to 12 sessions.
Yeah. So and then after those 6 to 12 sessions, you're thinking about the next thing.
Generally. Or they disappear for a few years and then they come back anyway.
Yeah.
It is crazy. To go from like people just picking these tiny things like a barcode or a tiny swallow to sitting all day with one person.
Yeah.
I'm just this girl from Raynham, like, mental.
No, but you're really good at what you do.
Yeah, but it's still crazy.
But then everything's crazy, isn't
it? I know,
yeah,
maybe. I'm just like, I guess I never knew what I wanted to do or who I'd be, or I'm not a daydreamer, I don't think that far. I just feel really, I have a really nice life and I'm really fortunate.
But then it's like, it's the tattooing, if you think too much about it, it makes you crazy. Like, you can't think about how successful you are and the fact that you've got a fucking book out. So, book.
Yeah.
Tell us about the book.
If I say I'm going to do something, I've always done it. So,
the
third lockdown, obviously, it didn't have an end date, did it? So, it was like... So, the only thing I had been doing consistently was training with my friend, like boxing training and stuff. So, I just felt like... Well, years and years ago, I'd got asked to do sketchbooks. But... A lot of tattooers will make a book, but all their drawings in this book are what they've tattooed on people. So I was like, I mean, I'm cutting my nose off to spite my face. You've already made money out of it, and now you're putting it in a book to make more money out of it. Plus, you've done all these drawings for clients, and you're happy to just sell them so anyone else can copy them. It's weird.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? You said you'd do it, so it's got to be a book of original drawings. Also, I was like, well, what do I think my strengths are in tattooing that I could help people with? And I do think, not the best by far, but my understanding of composition is better. So I just thought, oh, I'll do a book of sketches that will demonstrate how you can make an image fit the body, how it would look when you move your arm and your elbow. So I just would train one day, and then the next day I'd do a drawing. And then I was like, set myself fitness. I was like, right, you're going to do 50 drawings. I did it. It took me a while, but...
Yeah.
And it got me through... I think I literally finished them a couple of weeks before the last lockdown ended. Yeah. And then I obviously wanted to put some writing in and it took a bit longer, but...
Yeah.
Yes. It's out.
And it's amazing.
And it feels really nice and it looks really nice and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's brilliant that you could do something, because obviously you didn't work throughout lockdown, did you? So it's amazing that you've been able to still create something that you love and that is really nice.
I feel you have to take the opportunity that you'd like, take something from anything that's given to you.
Yes, I could.
And I think the problem is a lot of people in the first two lockdowns were really productive, and it was the third one that a lot of people struggled with, and I just thought, for some reason I was just seeing more focus to do something I've always wanted to do something that would be hopefully useful to tattooers, but also something nice for people just to look at.
Yeah.
Even those that aren't into tattoos, can look at a book of drawings and be like, you know what, there is some artistic... Maybe that's in the back of my mind. A lot of people think tattooing's a hobby or it's not that artistic, and you're like,
yeah,
no, really is hard work.
Yeah. That's what my mum... Because my mum and dad haven't got any tattoos. Like, they weren't... They've never asked me why I've done it or been like, oh, no, you know. And they... My mum said to me the other day, she said, they're just pieces of art. And I was like, I know, this is why I have them, because yeah. they're beautiful. And it has, it's just completely changed.
Do you not think you just get it because you're more of a creative person anyway? Because you are as well.
Yeah, but I just, well, yeah, maybe. But I like, I really like flowers and pretty things.
And the way it makes you feel about your own body.
Yes, and that's also what I wanted you to talk about, yeah. is that, it's the way, so I've had my stomach done recently, and my yeah. bum and my tops and my thighs, and I did have my boobs done because my children, my wonderful lovely children yeah. say that my boobs and my belly, because I've got my belly button kind of goes down, so it's like a little sad mouth. Oh. And they say that my sad, it's my sad face, so my boobs and my belly are my sad face. And so I've had some flowers tattooed on my boobs, and they're like, I've cheered it up because yeah. so, it looks like it's going to a festival, so it's happy. But since I've had my boobs cheered up, I do prefer the way they look, and having my stomach done has completely, it's yeah. a fucking game. And I never even thought about it, because yeah. I didn't start having tattoos because I wanted to cover stuff up. I've always wanted one. I finally got one, and then I got another one, and then it's just, they're addictive. Well,
I don't even think it's addictive. I think it's transformative, and you don't know that it's yeah. that until you're in it.
Yeah.
And it's a slow process.
I started when I was 30, so it's been 13 years, and I never thought I'd have as many as I've got, yeah. but I love them, and I can't, and now I've had my stomach done, I'm like, I actually look at my stomach now, and I'm like, that's a nice stomach.
Yeah.
And which is ridiculous, because my stomach's fine anyway.
It doesn't make any sense why you view... but I was exactly... Yeah. Why do we view it differently? Just because it's got a yeah. tattoo on it.
Because it just looks prettier.
Yeah.
But it is. But you say that you have a lot of women come to you. Do you have women that come to you with areas that they want to cover, or do they just want to have tattoos, and then afterwards they're like, oh my God, I feel better about myself now?
It's weird. It's quite... It's hard because a lot of the women that want the big work, you only realise how shy they are when you're near the end and you see how much they've changed.
Really?
Yeah, because it's hard because obviously everyone that comes in to get a large piece is A, nervous.
Yeah.
So it's different anyway. They don't know what to expect. They're nervous, excited. They're about to go on what is going to be quite a financial and time journey yeah. with me. So there's lots of things going on in the background, and then they've got to get naked, especially if it's a back piece. And then you're worried about someone looking at, you know, not looking at anything. Mm. And it's only when you're 3 or 4 sessions down where they don't care, got their pyjamas on, bum comes out easy, that you yeah. see, and it's hard to know whether, is that the tattoo, or was it just because they're now comfortable?
Yeah.
And it's all, but I would say most women definitely, they do end up loving themselves more, which is,
yeah.
I only realise the older I've got how important that is.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing it for anyone else.
Yep.
It's just well, yeah. them. They're not...
Like, my tattoos, I won't... Well, my chest and my stomach, no one's going to see that unless I've got a bikini on.
Yeah.
It is just for me in the morning. But then in some ways, I'm like, I want to wear shorts and a bikini top all the time because I want everyone to see it. Maybe next summer.
When we get it finished, we go. But
yeah.
It is weird, isn't it? Like, because you're... It's a very intimate thing, but it does change you, and it changes yeah. the way you interact, how you feel about yourself, and then
yep.
in turn, that's how you act with people.
Yeah.
It gives you more confidence and more self-assurance, and you're like, but it's just a...
Yeah.
You've just coloured yourself in. But to a lot of yeah. people, they think you've made yourself look ugly, or you've yeah. disfigured yourself, and why would you have done that? What you look like on your wedding day, what you look like when you get old, and you're like, you have no idea yeah. how much this is... made yeah. me who I am.
And I love it. Like, I can't imagine myself without them now. I just feel like that's part of who I am. But also, still, I find it a bit weird sometimes when people might look and you just think, why are they looking? They're like, oh yeah, I've got a lot of tattoos. Because I'm just so, well, because they're not, they're just tattoos. But obviously there still is a stigma attached, even though it's a lot more widespread now than it was when we were like 20, you know.
Well, anyone who was heavily tattooed was like seen as a bit rough around the edges or something wrong with you. But then again, I guess with the, it's hard because everything, with the influx of, it used to be old men tattooing, then you had like the punk era, and then it's now gone to the art students.
Yeah.
Like, who do we think we are coming in and trying to make it like legit and...
But that is now when people like, because people obviously talk to me about tattoos because I've got them, they're like, oh, I don't know what to get, I don't know what to get, or... And I'm like, you've got to... For me now, getting a tattoo is you know what you want and you get someone that you like to draw it.
Yeah.
Because there's, you've got so many options for different styles. And like back in the day, it was just like, do you know someone who can tattoo?
Yeah.
You know, because it was just a standard.
Line work, all right, yeah, will it?
Yeah. But it's completely different now. So the last I recommend, and obviously I could tell them about you, but it's like, but it depends what style you want, you know, because...
It's hard. I still get asked in my gym, a couple of them have found out I tattoo and they want me to like fix up old school football badges. How do I tell them that's not what I do?
Yeah.
Or they're like, I want to get tattooed, and I'm like, but you haven't seen my work. Like, it might not be for you.
Yeah.
Like, I can tattoo, but if you want a black and grey angel, that's not. I'm not the person to do it. You won't get a good job.
Yeah.
It is. If you want a colourful animal, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But God, but then how lucky am I that I get to pick. You get to pick and choose.
Well, it's strange, hasn't it? Because you're an artist, so you have your style, so that's what you do. But that's really, I mean, that's how it should be, because they are works of art. You want someone who is amazing at what they do, and you love that, to do it. You don't just want to get some random who can...
No. Well, it's the investment, isn't it, from both of you again. Like, back in the day, you'd walk in 20 minutes, is all you're going to be with someone, or an hour, a couple of hours at most. But this is now, look, you're looking at 40 hours plus.
Yeah.
So you do want someone who's going to be invested in your tattoo as much as you're investing in them to do it.
And someone that you get on with. Like, I love coming to see you. Can we have a good old chat?
Yeah. Lars, who tattoos me, in the tattoo world, he's kind of like an enigma. But he has done consultation. You go to Berlin, he does a consultation with you. If he... And everyone's like, oh, he's just so... he's this, that, and everyone. I'm like, no, if he doesn't get on with you from a consultation and a chat, he won't tattoo you. And everyone's like, he can't do that. I'm like, but if you're going to sit in a room with someone for 40 hours and you don't get on, why should you both put yourself...
Like,
why would... I think it's genius.
Yeah.
Absolute genius.
No, I don't blame him.
And you get such an amazing... Like, he is all... Like, he's one of a kind.
What kind of styles does he do?
It's kind of like... it's based on realism. It's thick lines. It's like traditional tattooing meets realism, I would say.
Yeah.
But again, he's like... He properly studied sculpture, like we're talking.
Okay.
Hammer, chisel,
all
of that.
Wow.
But he will draw something, and if on the day it doesn't fit, he'll send you home and start again. He is next level.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be perfect. To the point, I just think it must be quite a lonely life because everything's for his client. Yeah. I don't think people realise how much he puts in for your tattoo.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing with you as well. It's like, if somebody emails you and say, I want a tattoo, it's not just the time that they're sitting there for you doing it, it's the hours of drawing beforehand.
Yeah.
And you're a perfectionist. Like, I've spoken to you before and you're like, oh, I did drawing, but I didn't like it, so I've had to start again. Yeah. And I'm just like, there's so much that goes into it.
Or even 4 months down the line on a back piece, I will print it up and I'll go draw over the top and make amendments to what I've already done. Because my brain changes the way you think, bodies change, the way you look at things, you're like, that could be better there. And that's why I also don't like doing one session tattoos, because I always find I like to come back to something and just level it up a little bit more.
So why did you decide to go from the shop to your own space?
I was tired of running a business. I couldn't be hands-off enough.
Yeah.
So there was that element. There was the element, obviously, doing large-scale work every day, which is quite exhausting.
Yeah.
But I
can't imagine, actually, doing all your massive pieces and then actually having to run a shop at the same time as well.
And the people.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, they're all artists, so...
Yeah.
And you have to bend. If you want someone to earn you money or to work well, there might be times you're doing their car insurance for them or booking a flight because you're like, if they're going to have a day off because they can't cope with the stress, I'd rather take an hour out of my day.
Yeah.
And they still turn up, look professional and tattoo.
See, this
someone.
Is why you don't want kids, because you've actually already had quite a lot.
But then I also was paying a shit ton of money to have a shop on a high street when high streets are dying. And I knew, without before COVID, I knew it was going to change.
Yeah.
Like people use the internet now. They're not going to walk past and come in. Well, also, we'd create a reputation where everyone thought we were too busy anyway, so they didn't come in or think we had any space. And it was just like, the lease is up. Either you're going to sign another 5 years.
Yeah.
Or you're going to try something else. I tried something else.
And it's worked out wonderfully,
hasn't it? Yeah, it's worked out. Probably the happiest I've ever been.
Yeah. So you got basically got a little studio at the end of your garden.
Yep. Separate access, separate kitchen, separate bathroom.
Yeah.
It's kind of ideal.
And it's lovely. You've got parking, you're close to the train station.
Yep. Even though you still want me to move, and I might move.
Even though I definitely think you should move around here, because you can still have parking and be close to the train station.
It's on the underground.
But it's really good. So how booked up are you? If people want to get booking with you, are you booked up till next year now, obviously?
I'm booked up till next year, and I had all the new inquiries I told to contact me in now and November for like April, May next year. I'm not nowhere near like I used to. I used to book like years in advance, but I can't. Really? My brain can't. What happens if there's another COVID? What happens if I want to take holiday? What happens if I'm sick? You can't. So
how many clients have you got on the go at the moment then?
No idea. I don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't know. Because some haven't come back, some will come back, some have to take longer breaks, some have got pregnant. It's got to be 50.
Wow.
Which doesn't seem like that.
Well, no, it does, because it's all more than one visit, isn't it?
Yeah. That's why I'm really fortunate, because realistically, I was like publicly open my books. So let's say I do 4 days a week.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have to take that many people on, would you? Because you say if it's a back piece, that's at least six sessions.
Yeah.
That's 6, 12, 18, that's 24 sessions they need. Then you've got to take on, I can't even take on 10 new people a year, really.
Yeah. It's a good problem to have, though, isn't it?
It's a good problem to have. It's nice still being relevant and that people still, because there's such a good amount of tattooers in this country.
Yes.
And I can't keep up with them all. They're all brilliant and they all come in at this. And mate, that's the client I had the other day. She's been getting tattooed by someone who's been tattooing 3 years.
Wow.
It knocks me out of the park. His work's amazing. And I'm like, that's not fair. What's all this shit stuff? But the fact that people still find me. Because I'm not so in. I don't want to be making TikTok videos. I don't want to join that to be still relevant.
What do people do in TikTok videos that are tattooists?
It'll start off with like a stencil and then zoom into that and it'll have some cool music with it and it looks really good.
You need someone to do all that shit. You're not going to do that yourself. You have to have someone to do all that. Yeah.
Which seems crazy that that's the world we live in.
But people don't. You've put your stuff up on Instagram.
Yeah, it just doesn't get seen that much anymore. But then, but then I'm also like, it's a free platform.
Yeah.
So can we moan about it?
Have you ever paid?
Never.
Yeah.
Never. Don't hashtag either. I'll make my own life difficult. Don't hashtag. Don't do anything.
Reels. When I do a reel, they get seen by thousands of people, and it will literally just be me talking. It's not anything exciting.
I tried one, and one got seen by loads, and then every other one I did didn't. But then it was, I just uploaded a video as a reel, which wasn't making an actual, I don't understand.
Like when you can probably edit. When you do your stories, do them as reels instead.
Right.
Because you can still then share them as stories. Oh. Just to get, if you care about getting the views, no, you don't care.
No.
But it's really hard because social media can be amazing.
Yeah.
But it is also a complete bastard.
Yep.
But it's, like you said, if you're not paying for it, you can't really moan, can you?
No, we can't. It's free advertising.
Yeah. But it is annoying that, because I've got friends that are content creators, and it's like, one day their post will do amazing, the next day no one sees anything, and it's like, you don't know why.
Well, so the a photo of my laser removal for my chest, the before and after, 25,000 views. As soon as I posted anything about the book, 800. So also because you're selling something, they're like,
yeah,
nope.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's about, I know someone said that in Facebook, if you post a link, or in the text, if you write anything about visit this site or certain words, it doesn't get seen. But if you put that in the comments below, it's fine. It's so, yeah. But that's why you need someone. You can pay someone who knows about that if you care.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the way forward, because I'm just like, there's too much information.
I don't want to pay. Why would you want to jump through hoops?
Yeah.
And exactly. Also, if you know you've got a good product, someone will see it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not desperate for...
And it's word of mouth as well, I think, with
tattooing.
Thank you so much for talking to me about it.
Talked endlessly.
This is podcast, that's
Thanks for letting me do my first one.
Oh, is it your first one?
Yeah, of course. I've never done.
And I'll post links. So your book, so you've done, because the first lot sold out in pre-order, didn't they?
No, I made 50. Everyone's like, why did you make 50? I made 50 in case there was anything I didn't like.
Yeah.
Instead of being stuck with excess books, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So I made 50, they sold out in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Then I've pre-ordered another 80 and I've sold 57.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'll post links to everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the book called?
87 Days. Because that's how many days it took to do the drawings.
Aww.
Yeah. Quite like it.
By Rebecca Marsh.
Yeah, I know. Well, see, the thing, when you used to travel for tattooing and you weren't allowed to, if they Googled me, nothing would come up because my surname didn't exist. And now I'm like...
Of course, yeah.
Hold on, Rebecca.
Yeah, but then do you... Because obviously, of course, you go abroad, don't you?
There's no visa. There's nothing that exists for us to work.
Yeah.
We have to...
At all?
Nothing. I have to travel illegally. I have to post all my stuff. It's the most stressful thing ever.
Why not?
No idea. No, there's no short-term week visa. There's nothing. I don't even know how I'd pay it. I'd go every time and pay. I don't know.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
There must be something for bands. But I don't know how...
No, there is for... because you can get DJs and stuff. Music. I'm sure with most jobs that there's something, but it's weird that there's nothing for...
I've never been.
What about piercing?
No idea.
That's really... I just assumed that it was just too much ag or too expensive, so people didn't bother.
As far as I know, nothing exists.
Wow. But obviously with COVID, do you see that kind of calming down a bit anyway?
I haven't been able to travel for... I don't know what it's going to be like when I travel.
Yeah. Well, because, of course, because all different countries are going to have different restrictions, aren't they, anyway?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be more worried about what vaccines you've got or whether you're here to work or not anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's bad enough. Loads of my clients haven't... My international clients haven't even been able to get back to get tattooed. I've got my first German girl next week because she's not been able to get here for 2 years.
Wow.
Because there was no point coming. She's got one session left on a back piece. Why come and quarantine? She would have had to quarantine for like 10 days.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Just couldn't do it.
Wow. Oh, that would be nice. I bet she can't wait.
Can't wait to see her.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, well, thank you very much. And yeah, I'll post links to everything. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'll see. Well, I'll see you soon.
Now I know where you live as well.
Bye. Hi, I hope you enjoyed that. Today, if you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, it's actually my little daughter Juno's 8th birthday. So happy birthday, Juno. Not that you'll listen to this. And my eldest daughter Lola has been away all week on her first school residential trip into Wales. So that's been a bit weird because obviously as a single parent I'm used to not seeing my kids for a little while because when they go with their father for the night or a couple of days. But this is the first time that Lola and Juno have been away from each other for any amount of time, and Juno's really missed Lola, bless her. So yeah, that was an experience. But I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Please check out my other episodes. Check out the Epic Mum Chat on YouTube. Subscribe, share the podcast as well, because it's good to... sharing's caring. And if you have any guest recommendations, then please get in touch. Or if you have any subjects that you'd like me and Nikki to discuss on the Epic Mum Chat, then please get in touch.
or just if you want to get in touch, because I like a chat. It's Mental Health Awareness Week, or last week, and it's important to talk. I had where I've got some gynecological issues, and I woke up in pain last week and had a little breakdown because I wasn't sure whether I was going to end up in hospital or whether I was going to be fine in a few hours. And it's just quite traumatic when you're a single parent, because obviously you need to worry about your kids, and I wasn't sure whether I'd be at home when they got home from school, and that it just really upset me. But I spoke to my friend and it made me feel much better, because it's just nice to have support. So I'm a big fan of talking, so if you ever want to talk, then I'm always around to listen. Not that I could offer you much sensible help.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sometimes it's just nice to be heard, isn't it? Anyway, big love to you all. Stay safe and sane. I hope you don't get this bloody cold. And I'll see you next week. Bye.